here. All right, now that's better. So sooner or later, you're going to run into people who are confident. And what's happened today is that it's become much more acceptable to vigorously oppose people who have faith. As a matter of fact, someone asked Richard Dawkins, what should we do if we meet people who still hold a religious belief? And Dawkins said, you should mock them. And this is, that seems a little, brutal for lack of a better word, but that's become more normal. So sometimes people will come after you with an argument, and they're so vigorous and so sure of themselves, it causes some doubts. You go, oh, I wonder if they're right. Maybe this isn't. Well, I don't know about that. What do I say to that? And the thing I've noticed is that sometimes some of the arguments they're bringing are really bad arguments from a philosophical and logical point of view. And that's what we're going to look at today, is some bad arguments. This is from a, is it good philosophy? Is it a good argument? Even smart people can say things and really have a bad argument. And so we're going to look at some of those things today and what it means. What's a good logical argument? What's a bad logical argument? So let me wade into this a little bit. So in English, we have one word for argue and argument, and I'm not talking about, hey, we're going to yell at each other. We know, like in a husband and wife have an argument, this is different. This is different. This, when it means to argue, it means to debate, it means to make a case. We're trying to make a case that God is real and it's reasonable to believe and trust Him, really to be persuasive. Lawyers go into court and they try to make a case and say, this is reasonable. This is the same thing. It's that type of argument and not arguing with each other. So from a that's what we're talking about. So do we need to do that? Are we called to do that? And I think we are. I think we are, no matter what culture, what time you lived in. The group my accountability group, we're reading through Titus. And this is Paul's purpose in life. And Paul will often say, imitate my life, do what I'm doing. And this is how he introduces his letter to Titus. This is a letter from Paul, a slave of God, an apostle of Jesus Christ. I've been sent. This is his purpose. This is his whole purpose in life. He says, I have been sent to proclaim faith to those God has chosen. This is, what is my purpose? What is his purpose? What is the role of a Christian? Paul says, my purpose, I've been sent to proclaim this message. That's the purpose of his life, and he's telling him this. To those God has chosen, and to teach them the truth that shows them how to live godly lives. If we're going to do this, we need to be able to persuade people. And so we're going to dive into this argument issue and what does it mean to do that. So why don't we pray? This is a little different from what we've done in the past, so hopefully, let's pray and hope this works today. God, thank you that we can look at this morning, what it means to make a good, sound, logical argument. And pray that you teach our hearts and that we make the best case we can for you. Amen. Okay, so a valid argument. Now, the word valid means many things. In philosophy, in a philosophical argument, the word valid refers to, is the logic correct? That's all it refers to. In English, valid means a lot of things. If you have a valid driver's license, it means that the driver's license, everyone would accept it. It doesn't mean that in philosophy. It only refers to the logic. And let's look at what an argument is. An argument has one premise. If you're going to make an argument, has a premise, it has another premise, and then you're going to draw an inference. You're going to say, because of these two things, because A equals B and B equals C, you're going to say A equals C. You're going to draw a conclusion. You're going to draw an inference, okay? So in philosophy, a valid argument has nothing to do with these two premises. It only has to do with if the logic getting to the conclusion makes sense. Okay? So I want to give you an example. You ready? All actors are robots. Tom Cruise is an actor. The conclusion is, Tom Cruise is a robot. Is that a valid argument? Yes, yes, yes. I knew it. This is the infamous Tom Cruise. This is a valid argument. Now, we know that the premises are not true because we know all actors are not robots. Right? So, just to make a point here, we're using this for trying to, just to make a point. A valid argument is only dealing with the logic. It's not dealing with if the premises are true or not. So if you're talking to someone, there's two places that an argument can fall down. One is in the premises, and another place is in the logic. So a sound argument is a successful argument has a different meaning. Validity refers to logic. A sound argument refers to both being true, the premises being true, and the reasoning being valid. Okay? So there's two places an argument can fail. One is the premises aren't true, and we see this in the Tom Cruise argument. Or the reasoning is not valid. The logic isn't valid. That's what the big sheet is talking about. What we're going to look at today, so we're not going to really, most of us know when the premises aren't true. But honest, when the logic is bad, it's very confusing. And honest, we do it to each other all the time. People who believe in God, people who don't, we commit these logical fallacies, they call them, false logic, all the time. And so I want to give you another example. We're going to change the Tom Cruise example. All actors are robots. We know this already. Tom Cruise is a robot. Therefore, Tom Cruise is an actor. Is that a valid argument? No. Why not? Because if Tom Cruise is a robot, if he is a robot, he may not be an actor. He may be doing something else. We know robots do other things. They can clean. They can do all types of things. They go. There's submersible robots that go down to protect people and do undersea search. So you can be a robot and not be an actor. This is an invalid argument. So validity refers only to the logic in an argument. And so if you're talking to people, why do we need to know this? Honest, I mean, logic is not the most exciting topic. Things that are emotional and that are exciting, but logic, it's kind of, if we had to go, what do you want to do today? Hey, let's get together after church, go out to a restaurant and talk about logic. That'd be fun. Woo-hoo! But logic is important. You need, if you can combine logic with passion and emotion correctly, then you have something that's fully functional. So people get into these emotional appeals, and a lot of times the logic gets off base. That's why we're looking at this, because a lot of times in the argument, and we're going to lay out a bunch of different examples here. So I'm going to give you one more argument, and we're going to see if you think this is reasonable. Everything that begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist. These are your two premises, okay? Premise one, everything that begins to exist has a cause. This began to exist, this watch, this microphone, everything, this building, This pew you're sitting in began to exist. Someone created it. It didn't come into existence on its own. The universe began to exist. Therefore, the universe has a cause. Is this a valid, sound argument? Thank you. Everyone agree? Right. So valid would say, is the logic correct? Is the logic correct? Let's do valid first. Is the logic correct? Yes, it is. Are the premises correct? Well, actually, that's a good point. Most scientists today are saying that number two, the scientific data we have now, they used to teach a steady state universe, that the universe was always here, but now they're not saying that. They're saying everything points to the expanding universe, that everything began in a very dramatic, short time frame. So most scientists are saying it looks like, from everything we see, this was even starting with Hubble and his research, that the universe began to exist. So if those are true, this is a good, valid argument. This is actually something called the Kalam cosmological. I think I'm stuck here. Can you help me out here? Thank you. The Kalam cosmological argument was actually started by Aristotle and was written by recently by a Christian philosopher named William Lane Craig. And he goes around debating people going, this argument, and it's interesting, I've watched him debate people on this argument. And you know what the debaters do? They always go somewhere else. They won't try to debate and say this isn't true. They bring in all types of other stuff. But they won't say this is an invalid. It's a good argument. It's a good argument. Okay. This is the basics of philosophy and making an argument. So what is a fallacy? A fallacy is the use of poor or invalid reasoning for the construction of an argument. It doesn't address the premises. It addresses the conclusion that's drawn. And so if you take out your sheet here, the big sheet, there's slight disagreement on what some of the fallacies are named. And so what a fallacy is, it's a failure in logic. And I want to look at some of these and how they come about in religious discussions. Why is that important? Are we looking for the goal to say, hey, you know, you're arguing very badly right now? No, what we're looking for is to help someone see that's not really a good reason to discount God. So we're going to look at some of these and how they come up in religious discussions. So here is one of my favorites. No true Scotsman. Honest, I feel a little discriminated against because I'm half Italian, and there's no Italian fallacy, but there is a Scottish. And I think we should actually, if you look at your sheet, the origin of this, you might laugh. Okay, no true Scotsman is on the right side here. Honest, this is how it happened. Angus declares, Scotsmen do not put sugar on their porridge. Which Lachin points out that he is a Scotsman and he puts sugar on his porridge. Furious, like a true Scot, Angus yells out that no true Scotsman puts sugar on his porridge. Okay, that seems a little ridiculous. It appeals to purity. Say, if you were this way, you would do it correctly. How does that apply in religion? We'll give a couple of examples. But it skips the logical argument. And it appeals furious. He says this. Well, a true Scotsman would do that. So let's look at... It skips the logical argument, goes right to a criticism. So religion is immoral. Here's an example. Religion is immoral and responsible for endless suffering. Look at the Inquisition and all those heretics who are burned at the stake, or the people who are burned as heretics. No true person would do that. Just discounts the whole thing. So that's one example. And there's more of these. I'm just going to hit a few so you can see how these come up. The next one I want to talk about is a genetic fallacy. And this is the attempt to invalidate a position or belief by showing its origin, by explaining where it came from. So the example I have here is Christianity arose because people feared reality. They were scared. And they were scared of death. Therefore, Christianity is false. That's how it came about. They're saying this is how it came about. And they have a philosophy, and they're saying it's false because of this. They don't try to prove it. They don't use logic. They just say, and this is where I've seen this come up very often. If you watch any of the debates, if you ever have someone say, well, you grew up in a Christian family. You grew up in a Christian home. You believe Christianity because people told it to you. Now, Richard Dawkins does this all the time. He says, if you grew up in ancient Greece, you would believe in Athena or Apollos. If you grew up in Norway, you'd believe in Thor. That was your environment. And I listen to that, and I go, oh, I wonder if he's right. I wonder about that. Surely we benefit from people who live Christianity, but it discounts. It says there's no truth in your belief. Is it possible there's truth in your belief? There really is. It says the only factor in your life is not that you're a conscious person, not can you put your faith in what you believe. The only factor, it oversimplifies it, is that someone told you this and you believed it. To go a little farther down this road of that argument, if you look in China when Mao Zedong was in power, millions of young people came to faith. The church exploded. The government was not promoting Christianity. These young people's parents were not promoting Christianity. The culture wasn't. Their parents weren't. The government wasn't. But according to this, it all happened because someone, and we see evidence opposite of that. People make decisions. So the genetic fallacy just tries to explain, because you explain something of how it started, that's the only reason. It oversimplifies the argument. Next fallacy. This is the ad hominem fallacy, an argument that attempts to counter another person's claims by attacking the person rather than addressing the argument itself. Does this really happen? Do they attack the people? In the debates they do, but it does happen. People are a little more polite in how they attack each other. Yeah, it's incredibly arrogant that Christians, that you guys think you have the truth, or you guys would say there's only one way to heaven. That's pretty arrogant, or it's pretty intolerant of you. What they're saying is, it's intolerant of you to think that way. How could you? How dare you think that way? That's kind of saying, boy, attacking you and your belief, as opposed to, let's logically look at what you're saying. There's a God who cares. There's a God who will judge the world because he has standards. I'm just bringing the message. So, what's not honest about this argument is that they're saying, you have this take on spiritual reality and you shouldn't. That's what they're saying. You have a take on spiritual, you should not have a take on spiritual reality. Here's the truth. They have a take on spiritual reality too. They're saying, I know better than you, and you shouldn't know. That's what they're saying. And if we're going to be honest, you know, we both have different views. Can't we talk about them? Can't we reason about them? And they're saying, well, you really shouldn't. You should just believe my view. You are intolerant. You are arrogant for thinking that. All right. Next one, appeal to emotion. This is really a distraction. Sometimes in an argument or a debate, And I go, oh, does this really happen? It happens all the time. People will bring up something dramatic instead of looking at the argument because they're looking for someone to respond in sympathy or some other. There's lots of emotions you can appeal to. But it distracts away from the logic, and you're looking to connect with the emotion. I'll give you an example. You can claim that God exists all you want, but the theistic position is still laughable and illogical. That's saying you're ridiculous. And there's really ridicule or shame. How could you think that? We're in the modern world. That's an old belief. That's really shame and ridicule. It's not engaging with the argument. Why do you think God isn't real? Why do you think it's unreasonable to think that? Oh, that's crazy talk. So that is another one would, even in a, what about how could you believe in God with all the people suffering in the world? That's an appeal to pity. It's not a logical argument. That's skipping the logic. I'm not saying you have to argue with people, but it's good to recognize when they're trying to skip over the logic. You've probably heard some of these other ones. We're not going to have time to go through all of them. The red herring. Ever hear of the red herring argument? You'll hear people who are into this, they talk about the red herring. The red herring is just throwing out some other statistic, some other information which isn't really related. It can be very dramatic or very exciting, but it's trying to skip over the issue. Irrelevant facts are ideas of an argument in order to distract from the topic at hand. Does this happen? Happens all the time. Happens all the time. The example I have, I read this and I thought, you know, Pilate did this with Jesus. Jesus and Pilate. Can you move me up, Aaron? Thank you. You remember this in John 18? Pilate is talking to Jesus. This is my opinion of Pilate's motivation, but I'm just looking at the outside. So Jesus said something very specific. Pilate asked him, "Are you a king? Are you a king?" And Jesus said, "Yes, I am. And everything I say is true." Pilate is faced with a decision. He's saying he is a king and that everything Jesus... Now, you're going to engage with that and say, okay, everything this guy says is true. Am I going to believe that or am I going to blow it off? And Pilate kind of goes a different direction. He goes, what is truth? Veritas. What is truth? It's kind of skipping. It's kind of changing the subject. Who can know? What's truth? Who knows? What's true? It's true to you. It's true to me. Everything I say is true. He's changing the subject. I don't think I want to go into that discussion. Let's change the subject. All right. There's two other ones here. I think I'm not going to dive into these. These are on your sheet. I don't expect you to be able to digest all of these. The straw man fallacy is on there. Let's just skip that one. You can look at some of these later. There's more than we can go through. Guilt by association. We do this. I've talked with people who aren't Christians. Honest, we do this to each other. I've seen that not just Christians do this, non-Christians do it, and we try to drag people in by bad examples. What about all the bad examples? I remember talking with I was walking by, I think it was the first time I met Joel. I was walking by a coffee shop, and there was a guy who was talking to Joel, and he said, you know, Christianity has been the cause of more pain and suffering than any other system in the world. And I was walking by, and I'm going, I just can't stand that argument. I'm just going to stop and say something. I've never met that. And I said, well, what about... And I brought up, well, what about all the communist leaders in the world? They weren't Christians, but surely, if you look at, Stalin, right? You know what Lenin said about Stalin? He says, "I don't want Stalin to be the ruler of the USSR. because he's just too brutal. And so 20 million people died under his, just brutal. And I go, if we're just going to talk numbers, you know, didn't a lot of people die there? Guilt by association. So he's saying Christianity's bad because people did bad things. And I'm saying, well, being an atheist is bad because those people did bad things. So how? And we're going back and we're not engaging in a logical argument. We're just saying there's a lot of bad stuff out there. Really, you shouldn't judge a system by its worst examples, by people who are not ascribing to its ideals. You shouldn't judge Christianity that way either. Say, oh, aren't those Christians? Well, if they're not doing what Christians are supposed to do, they're wayward Christians, so they're not good examples. So I want to give you another example which happened. This wasn't in a Christian circle. This is, look at the upper left-hand corner of your sheet here. This is the fallacy. What on earth is a fallacy? Someone did this to me. I was working for a construction company. We were building a precipitator, and the guys were making all these pieces, and they didn't weld them all together, and we had to weld them in the field because they weren't done. All these big, huge pieces, we were unloading them, and I was talking with, we were in a meeting, and I'm trying to show the guy that he owes us some money, but who likes those discussions, you know, and I showed him on the drawing, and I said, you guys, this is a field weld. You guys are supposed to weld this in your shop, and he looks at me, and he goes, that's not a field weld, that's a shop weld, or opposite. And I said, no, this is the symbol for that. I go, you guys are... And so he goes, and so we're going back and forth. I said, and I showed him on his drawing where the mistake was. And he finally said, well, he's vice president. He said, well, I'm just an accountant. I don't know these things. And then he argues, this is being done poorly, this whole presentation. That's the argument. Whatever you're doing, it's being done poorly. It's a fallacy. So whatever you're just doing it badly. They're trying to discount it because you're not doing it well. It happens. All right. I want to leave enough time to give a test here. So you have your quiz here. One more. I'm going to skip the burden of proof. So you have your little sheet here. If you have a pencil. Now, some of these can be more than one. I want you to look at your sheet. Take a little time. Look at these arguments about Christianity and say, if you had to pick a fallacy, do any of these fit? And I'll give you a few minutes to do that. Oh, I'm sorry. Who handed those out? Yeah, if anyone doesn't have the sheet, raise your hand and Nathan will give you one. Oh, okay. Does someone need, did everyone have one of these? I can give you'll have to share, I guess. So you'll have to share, sorry. All right. Well, why don't we... How far did you guys get? Is that enough time or no? I'm sorry. I apologize. Right, I'll tell you what, why don't we run through these? And sorry I didn't leave enough time for that. So this is a lot to absorb, and I know there's just starting from ground zero, so I apologize for not leaving enough time for that. But let's work through these. Some of these can actually be more than one unless you know the motivation of the person saying it. So number one, I've never seen any convincing evidence for proof that God exists. Atheists say this all the time. There's nothing convincing. I just suspend my belief in God. Prove to me that God exists. Any ideas? Yeah, it is. True. But which fallacy is it? It's the anecdotal fallacy. Okay. Any other thoughts? He said it's an anecdotal fallacy. Well, I picked this is the burden of proof fallacy. And in that they're shifting the burden of proof to the Christian. They're saying God doesn't exist. They already have the belief. You prove to me that God exists. It should be the other way around. You have a belief. You prove to me that God doesn't exist. I'm not obligated to do that. It's shifting the burden of proof to invalidate their belief. It's not a good argument. It's not a good logical argument. And so very common in these discussions. Next one. Belief in some kind of God and the source of all kinds of suffering is crazy. If you look at the Crusades or the Inquisition, so many people were killed. Religion hurts people. Any thoughts about this one? Logically? Could be a straw man. Could be even no true Scotsman. Could be more than one. But yep, false. Yep, there's several it could fit. It does depend on really, some of these are very clear in how they're said. Some of them, it depends on really the motivation of the person saying it. I mean, we can't always tell that. So good. How could you believe in God when so many people are starving and dying in Africa? Yeah, that's what I said. That's a dramatic, and most people, if you say that, there are really hard situations, and they're saying, and you do feel compassion. You go, well, maybe they're right. How could God let that? So it's an appeal to emotion. It's not a logical argument. Number four, anyone heard this one? Honest, I don't have an answer for four. I don't know what. But someone argued, well, how, that's really, can God contradict himself? Can 2 + 2 = 5? That's really silly. But I'm not sure which fallacy it is. Yeah, probably. Yeah, that fits. Thank you. Number five. This, I actually hear quite a bit. I hear this quite a bit. Quite a bit. Any opinions about five? Okay. Any other thoughts? Opinions? Ad hominem, yep. Could be guilt by association, too. So how could you believe it's really a misunderstanding of a God that, because he's righteous, has to judge sin? It's a total misunderstanding of that. All right. Well, we need to move on here. So thank you for doing that. And I'm not expecting you to remember all this, but to have a starting point. The website is at the bottom to help categorize these things to say and how to make a good argument. So, where I wanted to finish Give me to the next slide, would you, Mary? Where does this bad argument come from? Where do these bad arguments, where do these... And the thing that has come to mind for me is, if we do have an adversary, and a lot of times it doesn't look like we do, but he is trying to make things confusing. He's intentionally trying to do this. This is a strong statement. Jesus said, you are of your father, the devil. You do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand for the truth. He is, when he speaks, he lies. He speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. If an issue can be confused, there is an active attempt in the spiritual world for things to be confusing. And if we're going to help people, sometimes we need to help them see your thought process, not in a mean or insulting way, but to gently with humility say, boy, this may not be the way to think about this. This may not be the way to think about this. And we want to offer hope to people. I'm going to skip to the last slide. Can you get me down there, Aaron? It took a little longer than I thought, so I'm going to go right to the last one here. Always be prepared to give a defense. To give a defense for the hope you have. You don't know what conversation you're going to have or when it's going to come up. But part of this is you should not feel bad about it. So if someone brings a bad argument, you may not want to argue with them and say, I don't need to feel bad or guilty about this, because this is not a great reasoning. If someone brings a good reason, you say, well, I don't know, I'm going to look at that. But always be prepared to give a reason for the hope you have. I was in a meeting this week, and the person who was running the meeting started the meeting, and they said, I want to do a little get-to-know-you exercise. There's about a dozen people there. And she said, tell us why you're here on the earth. Why are you here? You ever have someone ask those questions and you count and you go, okay, I have four people before it gets to me and I have to answer this question? It's coming around the table. People said, I'm here to raise my kids. I'm here to do a good job. I'm here to help people. I was thinking, why am I here? What do I say? Why am I here? I said, I'm the pastor of this church. I am here to help people understand that God is real and that he created everything and that he loves people more than they could ever understand. You know what happened after that in the room? No one said anything. They sat there, and the lady who was running the meeting said, that was beautiful. Do you think she said it's beautiful because of the way I said it? I think no. I think because the idea that God cares for everyone is a beautiful idea. That concept, there's going to be a chance. We don't know when that's going to come up. You know what happened? People came in later to the meeting. They were late, and they came in and sat down. And she said, everyone has to do this exercise, so you three have to do this. She looks at me and she says, Dean, could you share your purpose in life again as an example? We're going to have chances to share, and we're looking to be able to do that as best we know how. So I hope this is helpful in understanding some of those things. Why don't we pray, and we'll have the music team come up. God, thank you that you are always logical. Thank you that listening to you and understanding you. I pray that you help us become good as we can at defending and offering the truth and hope. Amen.